Good morning, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the Smashy Business Show. My name is Hind Aldah, and I am here with
Abdul Majid.
Abdul Majid, I'm not even going to ask you how you are today because we have a lot of important news, and also there's no chit chat for today. So, Brands for Less sells stake to TJX, KBW Ventures invests in Noor Nation, and eDaddy raises $15 million for e-motorcycle launch. Also, if you're interested in property and real estate, make sure to tune in after we're done with the stories because we have a special guest. Anyways, moving on to the first story. Dubai-based Brands for Less sells 35% stake to TJX for $360 million, valuing the group at $1.2 billion.
It's a very, very big news coming out of the MENA region today because Brands for Less started in Lebanon but moved to Dubai. They've set up an office here. They have a shopping center here, Brands for Less. They have nearly 5,000 stores across the region, and they are like MENA's biggest off-price retailers. And then TJX, the global off-price retailer.
So if you've ever been to the United States, you've probably heard of TJ Maxx or Marshalls. I know I have. Every time we go to the US, those are the two stores we go to because it's sort of the same as Brands for Less, where they sell brands at a cheaper price. And Brands for Less sold a 35% stake to the TJX Companies, Inc. for $360 million. Now, they're expanding their footprint internationally, and this is the first step. So this partnership is set to make the company grow even beyond the GCC region, which is amazing. And it also highlights the increasing global recognition of Middle Eastern brands. And we've talked about the Fix chocolate so many times, and I bring it up because it's a Dubai-based brand that is growing internationally, and it's been... Everybody wants it, and we've seen even resellers of the same chocolate in the United States and in Canada. So this is another big step for not a UAE brand name, but like just say GCC or a Middle Eastern region brand name to kind of expand its footprint.
The good thing is we hosted him on this show like 6 months back on the Smashy Business Show, and he said a very interesting thing that Dubai is a case study which should be studied in universities, which should be taught in universities. And we had a very good conversation with him. So the guy is so exciting. More or less, now Brands for Less was very famous in the region. Yes. It's not that it wasn't known, but the guy in the last 2-3 years has Taufik Krede. He has become a superstar himself on TikTok and Instagram, on all social media channels.
So I was told by some friends of mine that if you see the owner at one of his stores, you can potentially get a discount or something. Yeah. So he always has fun initiatives for his customers at the store.
He's usually asking riddles to people, and if you answer correctly, 300 dirhams, 400 dirhams, cash prizes. Sometimes he's on the cash counter. You tell your battery percentage, he'll give you that percent discount. Sometimes people have like 100% battery or 90% battery, and they're like, okay,
take the stuff.
So people always think, oh, why did I shop for 2,000 dirhams? I should have done it for like 10,000 dirhams.
It's
also the personality of the person that has made Brands for Less such a big brand in the last few years. And I guess that adds to everyone wants free money and they go to the Brands for Less
store. And I think TikTok also helped a lot because he got viral there and people know him and the company.
He is more like a trendsetter in the industry. We've seen a lot of owners of a lot of big companies who are trying to do this. One example is Rizwan Sajjan of Danube Properties, the founder of Danube Group. He is also very active on all social media. But Taufik found a very good niche, a very funny, a very engaging, entertaining niche. And the most important part was it increased the footfall. Because everyone, when they go to Brands for Less, any store, they try to find him. That maybe if I get him in a store and he asks me a riddle, I can win something. Yeah. So it's a very cute, it's a very clever strategy that he employed, and the owner himself did it. So it's a template for other people to increase the footfall. It's not just good marketing. It's your own personality. It's your own brand that you have to build. and the brand will follow itself.
Yeah, so one other thing I would like to add is that this collaboration will provide more opportunities for Brands for Less's employees as the group implements its growth strategy with the backing of TJ Maxx and Marshalls.
Yeah. And it's not a small deal. They've invested $360 million. They bought a 35% stake. The company was valued at $1.2 billion. But sooner or later, if the coordination, the collaboration of these two companies works out, most probably TJ Maxx will invest more money in it and it will become bigger and bigger. Mm-hmm. So that's one story that will be told in the next 10 years in business classes, that this is how you grow a brand. So let's hopefully see. Again, it's a Middle Eastern brand. Mm-hmm. We love Middle Eastern brands, and now the world also loves Middle Eastern brands.
Yep. So let's move on to our second story. KBW Ventures invests in Egyptian climate tech startup Noor Nation. Excuse me. So KBW Ventures, which is led by Prince Khaled bin Walid, has invested in Noor Nation, which is an Egyptian climate tech startup. And it's founded by Raghi Ramadan, and it focuses on providing decentralized energy and water infrastructure solutions for off-grid communities in Egypt and sub-Saharan Africa. So how amazing it is that a startup is putting all its efforts and all its resources into helping people who live in off-grid communities.
We've seen in the past 5 years or at least a decade that sustainability projects, sustainability startups are coming more and more from this region. Mm-hmm. Because there was a lot of talk about oil and gas production from these countries and them contributing to the carbon footprint. But now these sustainability startups coming, the government taking initiatives to reduce the whole country's carbon footprint, it's a good sign that these are coming up and helping the government put up a good picture for this region. And the interesting part about this is that KBW Ventures, run by Prince Khaled, this is the first Egyptian startup that they've invested in. So they're entering new markets. They have nearly 80 startups right now in their portfolio. And I guess I read it correctly, 6 unicorns under them. So 6 startups which they took became unicorns. So it's a big venture capitalist, KBW Ventures. We posted on LinkedIn. The guy was very happy. Faggy, he replied also. So it's good that he's getting the important highlight, recognition that these startups should get. Yeah. Working in sub-Saharan Africa, it's always difficult. Yes. He's doing it.
So their flagship product, which is called Lifebox, is a mobile solar-powered unit which offers clean energy and safe water. And it's designed and manufactured in Egypt.
Yeah, I saw his profile. There was the word entrepreneur. He didn't write entrepreneur,
like
he wrote entrepreneur. So again, a very good story coming from Egypt. We always talk about how Saudi Arabia, UAE have always been the leaders in this region, but Egypt is growing very quickly. Mm-hmm. The startup scene is becoming very, very good.
It's following
Following on the footsteps of UAE and Saudi Arabia, and maybe they're carving out a whole new market for themselves. Mm-hmm. No one ever knows. Maybe they grow bigger.
Yeah, so let's move on to our last and final story.
It's also about a startup.
Yes, we'd like to talk about startups here on the show. So a sustainable mobility startup called eDaddy raises $15 million for electric motorcycle launch. So eDaddy is a Dubai-based startup which focuses on sustainable urban mobility like motorcycles, has secured a $15 million investment, which is around 55 million UAE dirhams. Yeah. And they plan to launch its first ever fully electric motorcycle in the first half of 2025. And it's designed to emit zero tailpipe emissions and also significantly reduce carbon emissions, which is a great point after Majid's point. And their production facilities are located in Dubai Industrial City and the National Industries Park. I believe they moved, or they were recently headquartered in India.
So the good thing is that we recently saw a news that JLT in some areas They prohibited the scooters and everything. So this coming in, this can help the market. There is a big gap now because people are not able to drive those e-scooters on the footpaths. It was a safety hazard. It was a good initiative, I believe. A lot of people who drive those are angry.
Of course.
Again, it's for the safety of the people. It's never because someone is trying to like
annoy
you. It's always like in the bigger picture, it's a good thing. Recently, they also banned e-scooters and everything from the metros as well. So it is causing a lot of problem for the people. So obviously, this country always thinks about the people first and the majority of the people. So this will be a good initiative. We'll see that with these motorcycles coming in, there will be motorcycles available on the road, and it has a climate controlled setup. So your battery will not burst in the heat of Dubai or UAE. So it's good in that part also. So let's see. Hopefully it has a very big market and they're launching here. So
yes,
I'll buy it most probably.
Yeah, it's good because again, with a lot of cars here, that you know, it's good
and
to
emissions.
Have this initiative. Yeah, emissions. It's good to have an initiative like this. Where do you think Talabat or Deliveroo or other delivery companies would switch to an electric vehicle?
Most probably, if they can strike a deal with them, the delivery companies would be the first one to jump on the bandwagon and take all the bikes from themselves.
Yeah, that would be great because there are a lot of delivery riders.
And
in
maybe
the city.
In the winters, like the 4 or 5 months we have of normal weather, normal people can use it, because usually what happens in Dubai is you take a car and you're only one person in the car. Mm. So with the scooter, you'll take less space on the road, so less traffic. And you can just ride it out to a nearby place. Usually you have to take out a car, park it, find the space, everything. With a scooter, it will become easy for people as well.
Mm-hmm.
So it has a growing market, has a big market. Let's see what the results are as soon as they launch at the start of 2025. We'll give you the updates.
Yes. So that's it for our top stories today. We'll take a short break and come back with an interview with Kabir Joshi, founder and CEO of Vantage Capital. Welcome back, everyone. We have a special guest on the show. He's the founder and CEO of Vantage Capital and Vantage Properties, a leading company in Dubai's real estate market. He went from selling perfumes on the streets of the United States to becoming CEO of a property investment and major property developer here in the UAE, advising on property transactions worth 1.5 billion dirhams. Please welcome Kabir Joshi.
Thank you, Hind. Pleasure to be here. Thank you.
Thank you so much for coming.
Very well.
So let's kick off with our first question. How has the real estate market in Dubai evolved over the past 20 years since you've been here? And what have been the key drivers behind this transformation?
Oh, wow. That's a deep question, Hind. I could write an essay on that. But I'll tell you what, I've been fortunate to witness the growth of Dubai pretty much from the time they opened the freehold real estate market back in 2004 is when I moved here from the States, right? And you see, Dubai has always been a very attractive proposition for multiple countries, residents of multiple countries, right? Of course, we know about Southeast Asia. Now, I'll tell you, the evolution, as I see it, has been back in 2004, it was a frenzy of buying real estate because it was the first time. You have to understand, many, many years before that, there were a lot of people living in Dubai, right? And they were working here. And this was the first time they got an opportunity to own real estate, right? And so that was a key driver. It was that opportunity to say, wow, I can own a villa in the Springs. I can own a land in Emirates Hills, or I can have an apartment in the marina in the first three towers that Emaar made. And it was just a super exciting time, right? And at that time, there was not that much of a global demand. There was a lot of, I was at Dubai Holding at the time. I was heading their real estate sales team for high net worth individuals. And I was reporting, I learned from the best, in the business at the time. And they're still my mentors. And we saw that a lot of local businessmen were the ones who were driving and, you know, really pushing the demand. And then, of course, was the Lehman Brothers downturn. And Dubai, of course, got affected. And the beauty of the city is the lessons that they take away from every tough situation, be it the meltdown of 2009 or be it COVID. So what I saw immediately after 2008-2009 is the setup of RERA. And the regulations that were put into place made it impossible for a developer not to deliver on their promise. So, you know, people talk a lot about escrow is a safety net, but why is escrow a safety net? The question is, when you're investing in a property or you're buying a property for yourself, one of the biggest risks that we call in the banking system is completion risk. Will the property be completed, right? And I can tell you, being a developer, if you start a project today, it is next to impossible not to complete it.
Right.
That just, I don't know of another country that has a system in place where the regulatory authority and the local banks are working together to make sure that the completion risk is nullified completely. Mm-hmm. Now, in between, what were the other key drivers? You know, the Expo was a key driver. You got to remember, Expo happened at COVID.
Yes.
And it was still a success. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I have no qualms in saying if any other country was hosting the Expo in 2020, it would have not been anything close to what Dubai achieved. Right. So kudos to that. That drove the property market. What's driving the property market today? Look, we are sitting in an economy where the economic agenda is set out to increase Dubai's GDP from 14 trillion today to about 26 trillion in the future, 2030.
Nice.
This is almost a doubling number. And they are entering 250 city-to-city trade agreements until the 2030 mark, right? Yeah. And that basically boils down to four agreements, trade agreements a week.
Nice.
And we are on track for that.
Right.
250,000 people moving here on an annual basis. I know and I believe, after spending more than two decades in this country, Dubai is going to beat their own target of doubling their population by 2030.
Wow.
It's going to double quicker than that. And we are seeing it firsthand. We are seeing people coming in from countries that I hadn't heard of before, right? I didn't know Eritrea existed as a country, and now I'm selling to people who are coming from Eritrea. So, yeah, trade agreements. And, of course, when you see that kind of economic growth and those kind of economic, you know, we are pretty much doubling our economic growth. The GDP is going to double. You're opening three new, you know, port corridors, trading corridors. All of this is going to create employment. All of this is going to create a huge demand for residences. It's affordable homes, mid-market segment. And the millionaire migration is has been all over the news this whole last three, four months. Number one.
Yeah, number one inflow.
Yeah, so when millionaires come and choose to make a country their jurisdiction, they're not just doing that to come enjoy the beach over here.
No, of course not.
Right? They're coming here to do business. They're coming here because of the favorable economic climate, the governance, and the political stability.
Right. And the safety.
And the safety.
A big factor as well.
Absolutely. Absolutely. As Sheikh Mohammed rightly said, if you're a woman and you are, you know, you're able to roam around freely alone at 2 a.m. in the morning, most likely you're in Dubai.
Right. And we always see these videos on social media of people, you know, rightfully.
Even the visitors, they always make these videos that, oh, let's check the Dubai cleanliness. So they'll walk barefooted or with white socks. They'll do something to just see that all the claims that have been made about Dubai are correct.
Absolutely.
And they are always correct.
They are. Yeah. They are.
So, sir, something that I extracted from your whole conversation, there is a concern for oversupply, because when you read about, there's a lot of concerns. They are concerns, I know. I know the answer, but from coming from an expert, if there is oversupply in the market, what will happen then? And if there is not, why is it not happening?
You know, that's a great question. Look, I get this question. I get asked this question. On a regular basis, as you can imagine. There is a fear of oversupply, and that's because people are seeing a lot of activity, right? There's a lot of off-plan in the market. There are a lot of new developers in the market. But, you know, let's take a case in point as an example, and then we can elaborate it to Dubai as a city. Look at JVC as a community, or look at Dubai South as a community. JVC has about 100,000 people living there right now, and there's a lot of construction activity happening there, including Vantage itself. We are developing 260 properties there. And if you look at Dubai South, the prediction is Dubai South is going to house about 2 million people. That's about 18 to 20% of the forecasted population. And 6,000 homes will be available by 2029 in Dubai South. So the question is, are 6,000 homes enough for 2 million people? The answer is clearly not. And the same thing goes for JVC. You look, you see, when you look at major developers like Emaar launching strategically in the northern, the southern side, you know, in and around Makhtoum Airport, Aldar announcing, you know, a multi-billion dollar logistics park over there. What's this going to drive is population inflow and, of course, demand for property. So I think these fears are largely unfounded. But let's address the what if part that
What if it happens?
What if it happens? Look, what if it happens is, the answer to that is, today we are sitting on one of the healthiest rental yields in the world,
yeah.
Right? We clear 6.5% to 8.5% on a residential property. This is unheard of in the US, in India, in any major economy, any major city like London, Hong Kong, Singapore, wherever you want to compare it to. Maybe these yields will go down to 4%, right? And in parallel, what we're expecting is that the EBOR is going to go down as well. We're expecting the lending rates are going to go down. It's an election year in the US. We already know Fed's going to cut by 25 basis points. So cost of borrowing is going down and the rental yield goes down. If they go down hand in hand, it's not going to majorly impact any big investor's wallet or pocket, right? And eventually, it has to pick up. I mean, we've got to understand that we are not an anomaly to the whole world. We will follow cycles.
Yeah.
But will the cycles ever be as steep as we have seen in the past? Absolutely not. And I can say that with utmost conviction because I'm seeing the strategic initiatives, not just of the government, but also of the government-backed developers. Where are they growing? Why are they growing? If these fears were true, trust me, the first ones to pull back on development activity would be the ones who are very close to the know of what's Dubai going to do in actuality. So, I think we're in a good place even in the worst case scenario.
Okay, so let's talk about elements like design and quality. So in a competitive real estate market like in Dubai, how do you think these elements should stand out, like design especially? And can you share examples where these elements have significantly impacted a project?
And please highlight the last rains, because design and quality of development, we saw a lot of very high-end properties drowned.
Yeah.
Cars were lost in the basement.
Yes.
There were swimming pools everywhere. So which developers, is there a regulation which will see to it now as well? Because we're expecting rains in the next few years, same rains again.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So yeah, quality and quality, quantity, everything from that perspective also.
You know, the rains are a fantastic example.
Oh.
Because first, let's talk about the the importance of design,
right,
and the importance of quality. Now, look at some of the older building, guys. Emirates Towers, to me, is a timeless piece of art,
yeah,
right? And it's one of the first buildings that was ever made on Sheikh Zayed Road.
I agree.
Right?
Yeah.
Then you go to the marina and the first three Emaar towers.
Yeah.
Beige and clear windows, classic Emaar style, still stand out as one of the masterpieces of the marina, right? A lot of good stuff came after that. Select Group does a lot of great, great design. We particularly are very, very conscious about sustainable and functional design. So we went out and started looking for a partner who can bring more expertise on the table. And we partnered with a 50-year-old developer from Italy called Vittoria Group Costruzioni, because they have specialized in a niche of luxurious functional design.
Nice.
So what they bring to us advantage is 50 years of experience of delivering luxury homes in the mid-market segment like Bergamo, where people are living now in a home for 50 years now, which is when the first home they delivered was delivered, right? And the chairman, Mr. Giuseppe, is a very, very active part of his business still in his mid-70s. I really applaud him for that. But then bringing it back to Dubai, you see, The beauty of Dubai is we don't see a rat race. There's not one concept. Bengati have their own flavor. Azizi has its own flavor. Imar has its own flavor. Damac has its own flavor. Mm-hmm. And smaller developers like Vantage also have their own flavor. So we have to be actually more design conscious, more quality conscious, because we are competing with extremely big players. So we got to make sure to the T that there is absolutely no gaps in what is on paper and what's going to be delivered. So when I say Spanish tiles, it's got to be Spanish tiles. When I say Bosch, it's got to be Bosch. Mm-hmm. When I say Italian marble in the bathroom, it's got to be Italian marble in the bathroom. I can't get away with that because I'm not a very large developer running 100 projects at a time, which makes us a boutique developer, and I enjoy that. Right? We enjoy what we do, and we've got a very experienced team who are purely focused on quality control. That's our major focus. So design, you'll see it evolve. And I think we've managed to bring the first Italian developer to this market. And you will see more and more of this happening. Because what it does is it gives you a flavor of two markets. Yeah. Right? So they are bringing their ideas. We have our ideas. And it's a great mix. You know, Europe and Dubai. Dubai is an epitome of architecture already. Yeah. It's recognized group. I mean, come on. We've got Burj Khalifa. We've got Palm Jumeirah.
Museum of the Future.
And the Museum of the Future. And we've got Palm Jebel Ali coming up. So that's the design aspect. I think we'll see more and more interesting designs coming up, but we will also see a very heavy emphasis on ESG compliance and functionality.
Mm-hmm. That was my next question.
I'll let you come back to that then. So let's talk about the rain. You know, the first thing is nobody expected it.
Right.
Yeah. Right? Mm-hmm. Even the weatherman couldn't have warned us for what was going to happen. So a lot of the flooding that we saw is because the city was not prepared for such a heavy rainfall. It wasn't designed for it. But I'll go back to my previous point, how quickly Dubai learns and reacts. Yeah. What happened a week after the
rains? There's a $1 billion plan for sewage.
There's a $1 billion plan for sewage. It's already in action. Yeah. It's already in place. It's already budgeted and approved. Mm-hmm. And the next heavy rainfall that happens, we will not see drowning cars and floating and people riding their jet skis on the road. I can promise you that. Except maybe in some areas where it's intended to be that way. For all you know, Dubai will make a water buck in the next one. Yeah.
No, but my point was, if just to clarify, did it hurt any big developer or any person, a company who like sold for billions the whole project and then it drowned? Will it hurt, like the customer would be able to trust them back? If I am a millionaire here and I'm buying like 4 or 5 properties, I would look at the data, oh, this place drowned, never buying from this developer or in this area. So will it hurt them?
Yeah, you know, I think for sure, if you built something which was not in accordance with the regulation of the time, it's obvious that your property would have been worse hit than other properties. Yeah. So Dubai Civil Defense already has a very, very stringent set of guidelines to prevent flooding, to prevent fires, to prevent you know, other climatic you know, issues. So in the sense, you're right, because if you did not follow the regulation and you ended up getting very badly. Now, if it's a one-off tower of one developer, you can say that maybe it was a dip where they built it over. But if the same developer had 20 towers in that area, all of the basements got flooded, then I'll be scratching my head thinking, but the next one didn't.
Yeah.
So the answer is yes. And investors and end users should look at that data.
Mm-hmm.
They should, in fact, do that level of research. Like you rightly said that, you know, was this developer's properties or entire communities affected? You know, because for a villa community, for example, the land is never plain.
Yeah.
So some villas will be at a dip, and that to me is a one-off anomaly.
Yeah.
I will not name a community, but I will tell you this, that I know of one where an entire street drowned.
I know. I didn't want to name them as well, but there's a lot of areas which got very bad flooding.
Yeah.
People went from one house to the fourth house, but this house was drowned, the other houses were safe. Even in my area, Discovery Gardens, it's built on a slope. So my area was not flooded.
Not flooded.
It was clean, but the whole this side, so all the exits out of that was flooded.
So you are having your morning cup of tea just looking at everyone getting flooded.
So yeah, I guess it'll be hard for some developers to come back and earn the trust of the people.
Yeah, because that really taints their reputation, I think, if it's continuously being affected like this.
Just for an interesting point, did any big developer face this? Because you know the market, you're in the market. Did any big developer face this problem? Just say yes or no. It's not.
I have to say yes.
Yeah.
Because I followed that very, very closely within my network, you know, and I was constantly... And being in real estate, you know how it is. Your friend's house gets flooded, he'll call you. And I tell him, you need to call your insurance company, not me. You know? But I'll help you the way I can, and we'll send you the best handyman team that we know. But yeah, there are some big developers, and it's not necessary that, especially in villa communities, that it was entirely their fault. But I would say...
Stick the mic again.
No, sorry.
No, the stick.
Yeah. You can just
sit. Yeah, you can continue, no problem.
Right. So I think in villa communities, it can be a case of a certain row of houses maybe on a little bit of a dip on the land. But if it's happened in many towers of the same big developer in the basement, that to me is a... As a buyer, it'll be a red flag.
Red flag, yeah.
So you said you work in off-market properties. She had a question about off-market.
Yes.
Yes, so... well, I have a question about what strategies do you recommend for investors who are looking to protect their investments during market downturns, especially in a market that is so dynamic like Dubai's market?
And off-plan or on-plan, part of that. What is the strategy?
So look, for an off-plan and off-market, an off-plan property, the one thing that investors must, or end users must look at, you have to remember the developer is largely a project management engine.
Oh, yeah.
And a face. Now, behind this developer is multiple subcontractors, multiple vendors, a master contractor, a PRO company that's coordinating with the government relations. It's a very, very large operation. So I always recommend to anybody who's interested in buying an off-plan property, that you have to dig deeper. When you're buying a property, even if it is a large developer, you need to know who's building that building, who's the contractor. Where, you know, developers are obliged to tell you who the contractors are, where the tiles are coming from, where the faucets are coming from, and you need to have that information. Because you, A, have the right to that information, B, this is what will give you downturn protection. Because if you buy a quality product, and I always give this example, two buildings could be right next to each other, and let's say that scenario happens where rents come down by 2 or 3%, I can guarantee you that the building which has better layouts, which has maybe larger layouts and better amenities, will see a smaller dip than the building next to it which doesn't have those things. So quality, who's the contractor, who are the vendors, what is the status of their escrow account, right? How many sales have they actually achieved? Mm-hmm. Because, you know, I could say today that Livel is completely sold out, but that would be an utter lie because I still haven't launched. So you've got to dig deeper and you've got to make sure that you're getting the right data. Mm-hmm. I would say go beyond the broker.
Right.
This is my pet peeve, go beyond the broker, do your own research.
So even if you were to buy from a big company like Armar, you still recommend... Look, dig even deeper than just the name, the big name.
Absolutely, because it's a large investment. And Imar uses the best contractors, but they use multiple contractors. Yeah. You want to know who's building your building. Mm-hmm. What is their track record, right? I'm sure Imar does not compromise on that. But as a buyer, if I was buying something in Dubai Hills today, I would like to know, is it Shafar Group? Is it ECC? Is it Aroma? Is it TAC? Who's building my building? Mm-hmm.
Okay. So do your homework. That's your suggestion for off-plan.
Data. Look at the data. You don't want to be overpaying. Off-plan is at a premium.
Yeah.
It will continue to remain at a premium because these are newer, better properties. Yeah. And it's always been the case in Dubai. But check data. It's all free now. It's all on free portals. You can check what are the comparable prices. I've seen some buildings where two different people have bought at 20% different prices. Oh. And that's simply because one person probably didn't think of looking at the sales data for that building and paid the price that was asked. And to me, that's a bit unfair. to whoever's buying.
20% is a lot.
20% is a lot,
like,
of money,
1
right?
1 million, then 1.2 million.
Because guess what? That 20% can go into furnishing your property and doing a short-term rental on it, which will take your yield north of 10%.
Yeah.
So, off plan, okay. What is your one big suggestion for people buying in already built buildings, like 5-year-old, 3-year-old, maybe a decade old? What is your one suggestion that they should do their homework for off plan? What for already built properties?
For already built properties, it's very important to compare the transaction data of last 6 months to the ask of that particular property. Yeah. And you have to account for, because a lot of buyers don't account for upgrades. We are seeing a lot of villas that are being bought by investors, upgraded and sold at a premium. And these are signs of a mature market. Yeah. So if you find an apartment which is upgraded and you know there's a premium attached to it, don't keep the mindset, I can do it for cheaper. Give a value to that. And the other suggestion I would make is, don't just go and look at the apartment and make the decision. You want to look at the overall health of the building.
Oh.
Right? So you've got to check the amenities. You've got to check for cracks in the walls. You've got to check, because all of this comes from, you know, how good the construction was. That apartment may look really good because it's up for sale. It's prepped up, right? But you can see small signs.
Right.
Maybe talk to the neighbors, I guess.
Absolutely. Yeah. Talk to the neighbor. Talk to the neighbors. See their pain points. Do they have to wait for the elevator every morning or not?
Yeah.
That's a really good point. Talk to the neighbors, because the neighbors will tell you.
Yeah. That is what I do. Whenever I'm trying to find an apartment, I always go talk to the neighbors.
Absolutely. Sit in the lobby and see how many disgruntled or happy people are walking out. Yeah. You know, that's a good one. Yeah.
Okay. So Len, end on like a summary note. What is the future of mid-tier residential market in Dubai? We have high-end villas, we have high-end Bengati, you again said. So we have a lot of stuff that goes into luxury. And then we have a lot of old areas which people are very scared.
Right.
But what is the market for, what is the future of the mid-tier market?
It's very bright, to put it in a nutshell, but I'll give you the reason for that. The reason for that is that people are looking for value. This is not just because of the nature of people and the population that's moving to Dubai, but as a collective population of the world, all of us became value-oriented during COVID.
Yeah.
This happened for everybody, right from the east to the west, north to the south. So mid-market, mid-luxury segment offers value for money, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, when we talk about the millionaire migration, every millionaire probably brings employment to 20, 30, 40, maybe 15 people.
Yeah.
Those people are not going to live in the Palm or in the Marina. They're not going to be able to afford it. But look at the stats. With the number of millionaires, we are in the number one city in the world for millionaire migration.
Yeah.
Just multiplied by 30. And those are the number of people who are going to be looking for mid-market properties. And that's why you can see that there's so much traction and activity in that market. Dubai South, Jumeirah Village Circle, Furjan, Science Park, Jumeirah Village Triangle. These are still affordable areas. And let's be honest, even from a rental migration perspective, the rental migration happens when your family grows. And this is just one of the reasons. Your family grows and you need a bigger apartment, but you can't afford a bigger apartment in the fancy location you're looking at. You want to go to the closest community. Where you can afford a bigger apartment and not be far away from the city. And that's why we love Jumeirah Village Circle, because with the Hessa Street expansion project, you're still 10 minutes from the marina, you're still 15 minutes from, 20 minutes from Dubai Mall, 10 minutes from Mall of Emirates. And I see a lot of people moving from Marina, JBR side, because it has become expensive. Cost of living is going up. And people's families grow.
Right?
They need the extra bedroom. Sometimes they need a bigger apartment. So a lot of these key drivers is going to keep the demand very buoyant for the mid-market segment.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So one last yes or no question. Should you invest for the next 10 years in any other emirate? It's a very tricky question, because Ras Al Khaimah is developing. Sharjah market is going up because a lot of people are finding Dubai very. So would you tell people who are investing in the long term to stay in Dubai or maybe try other options as well? Because there is the fear of property bubble bursting in Dubai.
I have a bias.
Yeah.
Dubai is Dubai, right? Yes, Ras Al Khaimah, Sharjah, especially Abu Dhabi, yeah, are fantastic locations to invest for the long term.
Yeah.
But if you're living in Dubai and you're going to own a property, one property in the UAE, we all know where you're going to buy.
Dubai.
You're going to buy in Dubai. You're probably going to use it for yourself. And just the, you know, the impetus that Dubai has and the inertia with which the city is moving, I wouldn't buy today in Sharjah, Ras Al Khaimah, or Abu Dhabi because I see more potential in Dubai. If I was a one property buyer, if I could buy four properties in the UAE, I would buy one in each Emirate.
Right. Okay.
Right? So that's the simple answer.
I have also one final question. So if I have 3 million dirhams, should I invest in one property or do I divide them into three different properties? What do you think is a better option?
Always diversification.
Always diversify. All right.
Always diversify. This is true for any financial asset because this is truly an alternative financial asset you're talking about where you want to invest and make a return from it. I would buy one ready studio or one bedroom. I would buy one under construction and I would buy one office. I'll diversify it further.
All right.
One office as well. Thank you very much, everyone. We hope you loved him. We loved him. Gave a lot of numbers on his. He had it on his fingers.
Thank you so much, Kabir, for joining us on the show today.
Thank you so much. It's my pleasure, and thank you for having me.
Thank you.
I hope you liked the questions.
So beautiful.
Liked answering.
Thank you. Questions were as good as hopefully the answers.
No, they were. Okay. Thank you very much. So you can join us on all the listening platforms, podcast platforms such as Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Rami. You can also find us on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, TikTok, as well as LinkedIn. So thank you so much for joining us, everybody, and we'll see you tomorrow.